Welcome to Listen To. This is Ted. The news was published on Friday, October 4th. Joining me today are Eric and Kate. Let's dive into our topic for today. Today we're discussing ADHD Awareness Month. What are the key aspects of ADHD that people should be aware of?
Well, Ted, ADHD is a real head-scratcher. It's not just about kids bouncing off the walls or daydreaming in class. We're talking about a complex disorder that affects millions worldwide. It's like having a brain that's always tuned to a different radio station than everyone else's.
I'm going to have to stop you right there, Eric. That's a bit of an oversimplification, don't you think? ADHD isn't just about being distracted.
Fair enough, Kate. I was getting to that. As I was saying, ADHD impacts executive functioning, you know, the brain's air traffic control system. It's not just about being unfocused or hyperactive. It affects time management, organization, and impulse control. Imagine trying to juggle while riding a unicycle. That's what everyday tasks can feel like for someone with ADHD.
Exactly, but let's not sugarcoat it. ADHD can have serious consequences if left untreated. We're talking about kids struggling in school, adults having trouble keeping jobs.
Hold on a sec, Kate. While I agree it's serious, we shouldn't paint it as all doom and gloom. ADHD manifests differently in everyone. Some folks with ADHD are incredibly creative and think outside the box. It's not a one-size-fits-all condition.
Agreed. But let's not downplay its significance. ADHD can severely impact academic performance and social skills if left untreated. We're talking about real struggles here, not just quirky personality traits.
You both make interesting points. How important is early assessment in managing ADHD?
It's absolutely critical, Ted. Early diagnosis can be a game changer. We're talking about dramatically improving a child's ability to cope with symptoms and succeed academically. Think of it like catching a small leak before it floods the whole house. Early intervention can prevent years of unnecessary struggle and self-doubt.
While I agree early assessment can be beneficial, we shouldn't rush to slap a label on every energetic kid out there. Overdiagnosis is a real concern.
Oh, come on, Eric. That's a harmful myth that needs to be put to bed. Underdiagnosis is actually more common, especially in girls and adults. For every kid who's misdiagnosed, there are probably 10 flying under the radar, struggling in silence.
I see your point, Kate, but we need to ensure assessments are thorough and consider other potential causes for symptoms. It's not always ADHD. Sometimes it's sleep issues, anxiety, or even just being a kid. We can't just hand out diagnoses like candy.
Absolutely. But delaying assessment can lead to years of unnecessary struggle. Early intervention is key. We're talking about giving kids the tools they need to succeed from the get-go.
I hear you, Kate, but we should also consider the potential negative effects of labeling a child too early. It could impact their self-esteem. We don't want kids to feel like there's something wrong with them. It's a delicate balance.
Let's look at a historical perspective. How has our understanding of ADHD evolved over time?
Oh, it's been quite a journey, Ted. ADHD was first mentioned in medical literature way back in 1902 by British pediatrician Sir George Still. Get this. He described it as an abnormal defect of moral control in children. Can you believe that? Talk about missing the mark.
That's interesting, but it's crucial to note that this early description was highly flawed and led to years of misunderstanding. We've come a long way since then, thankfully. It's like comparing a horse-drawn carriage
to a... True, but it was a starting point, Eric. In the 1960s, they called it minimal brain dysfunction, which was equally problematic. It's like they were throwing darts blindfolded, hoping to hit the bullseye of understanding.
You're right about that. The 1980s saw a significant shift with the inclusion of ADD in the DSM-3, later updated to ADHD in 1987. That was a real turning point in how we viewed and diagnosed the condition.
Absolutely. This recognition was a game changer for millions of individuals struggling with undiagnosed ADHD. It's like someone finally turned on the lights in a dark room they'd been fumbling around in for years.
How does this historical context relate to our current understanding and treatment of ADHD?
Well, Ted, it shows how far we've come in recognizing ADHD as a legitimate neurodevelopmental disorder, but we must be cautious not to overcorrect. It's like a pendulum. We don't want to swing too far in the other direction. We need to find that sweet spot of understanding and treatment.
I disagree, Eric. If anything, this history shows we need to be more proactive in identifying and supporting individuals with ADHD. We've spent too long.
I see where you're coming from, Kate, but we should learn from past mistakes. The history of ADHD is riddled with over-medicalization and stigmatization. We don't want to repeat those errors. It's about finding balance, not overcompensating.
That's precisely why awareness months like this are crucial, Eric. They help educate the public and combat lingering misconceptions. We're not overcompensating. We're playing catch-up after years of misunderstanding and neglect.
While education is important, we should focus on evidence-based approaches rather than awareness campaigns that might oversimplify the issue. It's not just about making noise, it's about making progress.
Looking ahead, how do you see ADHD treatment and management evolving in the coming years?
I believe we'll see a shift towards more personalized treatment plans, Ted. We're talking about combining medication with targeted skill-building exercises. Imagine a tailor-made suit for your brain. That's where we're heading. No more one-size-fits-all approaches.
While personalization is good, I think we'll move away from medication as the first line of treatment, focusing more on behavioral interventions. It's like teaching someone to fish.
That's short-sighted, Eric. Medication can be life-changing for many individuals with ADHD. We shouldn't stigmatize its use. For some people, it's like putting on glasses for the first time. Suddenly, everything comes into focus.
I'm not stigmatizing it, Kate, but we need to acknowledge that medication doesn't teach skills. We should prioritize skill building. It's about giving people the tools to manage their ADHD long-term, not just mask the symptoms.
What role do you think technology will play in ADHD management?
Technology will be revolutionary, Ted. We'll see more apps and digital tools designed to support executive functioning and time management. It's like having a personal assistant in your pocket, tailored specifically for ADHD brains.
While tech can be helpful, we shouldn't become overly reliant on it. There's a risk of exacerbating attention issues with more screen time. It's like trying to put out a
fire. That's an outdated view, Eric. Properly designed tech tools can significantly improve focus and organization for individuals with ADHD. We're not talking about mindless scrolling here. These are targeted, science-based interventions.
Maybe, Kate, but we should be cautious. The long-term effects of increased tech use on ADHD symptoms are still unknown. It's like we're sailing into uncharted waters. We need to proceed with caution.
We can't let fear of the unknown hold us back. Innovation in ADHD management is crucial for improving outcomes. We're talking about potentially life-changing tools here.
Innovation is important, but so is a balanced approach that doesn't overlook tried-and-true methods like structure and routine. It's not about rejecting technology. It's about integrating it wisely into a holistic treatment plan.
Thank you both for this enlightening discussion. It's clear that ADHD management is a complex and evolving field. As we wrap up, let's remember that understanding and support are key in helping individuals with ADHD thrive. Until next time, this is Ted from Listen 2.